Welcome to the Objective Secure podcast. My name is Mike and this is Vegas, baby. We're here to talk about all things LVO, and joining me tonight is a friend of mine who came with me to Vegas for the 2017 LVO, Brad.
How's it going?
Thanks for joining me, man. We're going to cover off a bit on what LVO was for us this year. We're a pair of Aussies. We live in Western Australia. It's not like we go around the corner to this event. We're going to talk about that in a lot of depth in a minute, but why don't we talk about you and your history of 40K before we get into the nitty-gritty and how I convinced you to come with me to Vegas for a weekend for LVO. So how long have you been playing?
I first got into the hobby in 96 with the 4th Ed Fantasy Starter Kit.
So that must have been around...
High Elves and Goblins.
Was it around 3rd Ed 40K? Or did
still
you play 2nd
Ed.
It was still 2nd?
It was still 2nd Ed Chaos Codex was pretty much the time I got into it.
Oh, wow, okay. So, you're an old hand at this.
Never played 2nd Ed 40K.
But you remember the Battle for Skull Pass, which was the High Elf Goblin combo kit.
That was the one that started all for us.
Well, you got the cardboard Griffin and the cardboard
Bolt Thrown Chariot and all that. Yeah, that's it.
I wish I still had that set. I did have the High Elves for that for many years.
I don't have the models. I think I've still got the cardboard cutouts.
That'd be kind of cool to see again. I saw the. Did you see the third? It might have been the second edition starter set for Fantasy had a cardboard Orc Dreadnought in it. Did you ever see the...
Fantasy?
40K.
40K,
sorry.
Yeah. I saw the 40K one, yeah.
Yeah.
Or the Gretchen and all that. Yeah.
I found those a few years ago and stupidly threw them out. I really wish I hadn't. So you've been playing a long time. So you've obviously seen 40K go through second...
I skipped 5th edition and pretty much 6th because I was away.
You were in Europe at the time for work.
Yeah.
And you're now back in for 7th edition. A few of those models...
Brooked all that, yeah.
Well, I remember... I think you and I met probably around 2002. Around the 2003,
first grand tournament,
something like that.
Yeah,
the GT here in Perth. And you were running World Eaters at the time.
Yep.
And you've still got that army.
They're still there, yes.
I actually saw them on the table.
Don't perform too well, but they're still there, yeah.
And that's, I mean, even back then, the paint jobs you had on those were pretty schmick, and you've improved since then, which I actually hate a little bit, and that's okay. And now you're running mostly demons.
Pretty much, yeah.
So you did up a new army, or not, you didn't do up a new army, but you added to the army before we went to LVO.
Yeah.
And
expanded
it
out a lot because different formats and all that, so...
Well, we also obviously got the Fenris supplement where you got some new bits and pieces for the demons.
Yeah.
And then obviously Wrath of Magnus more recently.
More horrors.
You had to paint a few.
Thankfully,
I
couldn't paint too much in that time, but...
Well, you have since then, though. You've added a lot to this army over the last few months, and I suspect you're probably still going to add a little bit more to it before you're going to walk away and try something else. Because at one point, was it you painting Eärendil Eldar at one point there? I remember you
all
did, like,
the metal Wraith Guard and all that. Yes,
and you had like half a Viper finished. Like, I remember the canopy on a Viper being finished.
It was all done. I just didn't finish the canopy because I didn't know if I wanted to do a blue Eärendil symbol.
Oh, that's right.
And I couldn't paint blue very well at the time at all. So I don't want to ruin this yellow because I really like it.
And the funny thing is, you were painting yellow before foundation paints, before any of the paint system that you got today.
Lots of
no airbrush.
Layers.
It was layering and layering and layering. And I remember it taking you not a small amount of time to get that Viper ready.
There's only going to be 20-odd models in the army, though.
Well, that's true, because that was 4th edition, it would have been?
No, it's still 3rd. I played the start of 4th.
I remember the 4th edition was probably 2004, I want to say, because I remember running my Grey Knights and in the tip-over point in the GT in 2004.
Or 5, probably 2005.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So suffice to say, you've been around the hobby a long time. Even with that break in the middle, you've still been around... 15 plus years, and your gap in the middle hasn't really hurt you because you're pretty successful at tournaments, luckily. Like, you generalships, I think you rank in the top 10 for generalship and for the overall
for
category
last year,
for 2016. And we had
the hobby bit brings me up a bit for the painting wise,
for the overall category. Yeah, I mean, you always do well for painting. It's one of those ones where the veteran hobbyists sort of come and go with the hobby. And I've known plenty of people across the years like yourself who take a big break, whether it's one edition or just a year or two, and they come back. And those hobbyists obviously have a really broad depth and understanding of where the game has been compared to people who might just pick up 6th and then see 7th and, oh, there's not that much in the way of changes. Whereas if you remember 2nd edition and armor save modifiers and movement and the psychic phase with the cards, if you remember
rules that that was 2 editions ago, it doesn't apply anymore.
And now with as of the recording of this episode, obviously we've started seeing some of the leaks for Adepticon and well, we're probably going to be
coming back full circle.
It's going to be an interesting time for 40k in the second half of this year. You also attended Linebreaker recently with us when we went down to Albany to play some games, and you dragged yourself down, and you got a long drive to Albany. I mean, we did it in 4.5 hours, and you add
another hour to that,
plus to that, so it's here, yeah. Decent drive. And you did that last year as well. So it shouldn't come as any surprise to listeners that I managed to convince you to jump on a plane to come to Vegas with us. And that was kind of, it was a fairly late decision to join the trip. Is that, yeah. I mean, that's fair
first
to say.
First of all, I wasn't going to travel there to play some games. I'm not that much of a competitive player, I guess. But then it's like, no, it's an excuse to go on a holiday and get over there, see something different. So.
And it was, I mean, the event was only 3 days. So you stayed on another week and a half or something.
Yeah,
so you were there 2 weeks. We were only there for essentially 5 days.
Yeah.
You know, it's not too terrible for a single guy to go, you know what, I'll go and play some games, hang out with my mates, and then do a bit of a wander around America and head back. So I think I'm glad you came because I had a ball and hopefully you didn't. We'll get into that in a second. Before we do, though, if you finished your demons tomorrow and then you went, yep, I'm happy with this army, I'm not going to do anything to it, what's the next army? Is there a next army?
I think it's always the next army, but what it is changes far too often.
Right, well, right today, if nothing new is released ever, but you could buy armies. So
the Gene Sealer cult certainly grabbed my attention when they came out.
I want to do another horde spawning army. That's a good idea.
Not so much that, but keep looking back at the Chaos Marines too.
Well, you've got the Trader Legions rules.
Yeah, it's all coming out with the new models and that too.
Well, you've got the Thousand Suns, obviously, with Magnus. Yep. We saw previews from Adepticon today for the Death Guard, which leads me to believe we will get Angron and the World Eaters at some point, hopefully.
And I still have unhealthy amounts on Sprue anyway, so...
Third-ed Berserkers, obviously, at that age.
Oh, those ones, yes.
Yep. So, yeah, look, I mean, Chaos, at least then you've also got the Allies option to bring demons in and expand... Yeah, you'd start with less Chaos Marines and primary demons and then kind of switch it around.
Yeah, move through, that's it.
So you're a Chaos
part
player
of a Grand
at heart.
Army, yeah.
All right, so we've got a Chaos player and I play Eldar, so that's going to make an interesting conversation when we start talking about the fact that 50% of the armies are Space Marines at LDO or they've got Riptide Wings. But I suppose rather than getting to that now, we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to try and spend as much of this episode talking about our experience at LVO, our games, the trip in general, and why you should just agree with everything you're saying, go next year. So we'll be back in just a second. So Brad and I are now going to talk all things LVO, Las Vegas Open 2017. It's fair to say I dragged you into it fairly late in the process, like we just hinted at. You decided to turn it into a holiday, but it wouldn't have been until probably November, maybe a little bit before November.
About then, yeah, I had about two and a half months.
Kept badgering you and going, come on, come on. And by that stage, I already had Sam from Albany coming over to play the Heresy. And myself, and then we knew of a couple of other guys on the east coast of Australia who were coming as well. So we had Adam join us.
One more from here as well. Initially Don.
Oh yeah, Don had bought tickets and then couldn't come. But we had Adam from South Australia join us when we got there. And then there were four.
11 Aussies.
11 in total. There were three from New South Wales. Three from New South Wales, three from WA, one from... South Australia is seven, so four Queenslanders. Yeah. We'll work it out, it's fine. And all of us, bar Sam, played the 40K Grand Tournament, the 40K Champs. Sam played the Heresy for 2 days, and I think it's fair to say that the standard of armies at Heresy, I don't know if you had a chance to see them, was pretty high.
Right up there, yeah.
But I think the best armies were in 40K. Yes. I think the standard was much higher, but I think the best armies were still in the Champs. But I think I might have even gotten ahead of... So why don't we start with... You flew in the day before I did. You were there Wednesday, because we got in Thursday afternoon.
Yep.
So you'd obviously had a chance to check out the venue. You weren't staying at the venue, though.
No.
Although you might as well have slept on the floor in our room, because
close
you
enough.
Stuff in our room.
Everything ended up there,
We all caught up on Thursday afternoon. We went and checked in, and obviously got a quick chance to look at the venue. And I did
They're still setting it all up.
Yeah, and there's some video on the Objective Secured YouTube channel that you can check out. of me wandering around the hall and getting some of that video. We signed in Thursday night. Signing was okay. It was they're using the Best Coast Pairings app. There were a few little glitches, I think is fair to say. The volume of players probably... You can plan and cater for that with your server as much as possible, but at the end of the day, you just don't know until you're there.
I was using Android as opposed to you on the Apple.
Yeah.
And they're very different the way they worked as well.
And it's fair to say that the whole weekend you were struggling to get the data that the iDevices were getting. I mean, you were getting it eventually, but the iDevices seemed to sync quicker.
Still couldn't search as much, had a lot less functionality as well. Yeah. So.
And hopefully they finished transposing that data over to Android. Yeah. But it did mean that because of the group of the 10 Aussies who were playing the champs, for some, like, I'd gone and bought a SIM card while we were in the States on the Thursday night. So it meant that I had local Wi-Fi and I had 20 gig of data for about 5 days. Yeah. So it was like, what table am I on, Michael? Who am I playing? Can I have a look at the list? Yeah, sure. And then the phone would be passed around and people asking me who they were playing. So that was an interesting part to the weekend. And then we were out Thursday night and had a good night and... found a weird pizza joint tucked away at the middle of some place in the area, and
the hidden pizza place was actually called Secret Pizza. Yeah,
yeah. That was after going out to airsoft shooting zombies with airsoft guns, but that's a tangent that we won't get into now. And then bright and early the next day, I say bright and early, the venue opened at 8. We were downstairs for about 8 o'clock or just after.
Just after. I think painting was at 8. But the main other stuff was about 9.
Well, I remember getting down there at just after 8 o'clock, and it was yourself, me, and Sam. And Adam had decided, no, I'm not going down because nothing's open. And I remember stood there, and I took some photos and some video of the crowd where the security were just after 8 o'clock. They were about to open. And then they let us through, and I sent Adam a message saying, yeah, dude, no, the doors are open, we're in. And he was down looking fairly disheveled about 15 minutes later. And we got a chance to go into the retail section. There were quite a few vendors there. We had Battlefoam and obviously Frontline Gaming and Forge World were the kind of the three that you got as you walked in. And then we had Privateer Press. You had Secret Weapon Miniatures. You had
Green Man Designs.
And then...
Fez Hats.
Yep, the Fez Hats. there was the guys from Cool Mini or Not doing a couple of their different game systems there. And I mean, I've got a video of it on the YouTube channel.
I don't know all the company names and all that, but it was,
and then obviously
about
that
10 or so different vendors.
Yeah, and look, I mean, Forge World got absolutely smashed, and it made even more complicated by the fact that no one seemed to have any access to do any sales. Yeah. It wasn't just Forge World, it was all of them.
The whole area.
And whether that was an issue with the Wi-Fi or some sort of electronics issue, all of them were affected. But it did mean that Forge World just got. Swamped. Utterly annihilated. There were about four of them, and full credit to James and his team because they got hammered that first. They must have been absolutely under the pump for the better part of 8 hours on that first day.
They had 100 sales with nothing going through the till. It was just stacked up waiting to go.
Well, Sam and I had a little pile going on fairly quickly. And I know that there were guys who spent way more than we did. Like, there were significant volumes of stuff going. And the guys handled it like champs. I imagine there was a lot of private stress going on for James and his team, but they all handled it really well. And congratulations to them for dealing with it like they did. But the sign-in that particular morning was fine. The event started on time. It was a 10 o'clock start. Yeah. There was a little bit of delay in getting the matchups for that first round as they kind of ironed out some of the kinks, but we did get our matchups for round one.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go into my games. You can go and check out the YouTube channel for all of my recaps of the games. So we're going to talk about Brad's games tonight. Now, Brad was running a Burning Sky Host.
Yep, Burning Sky Host. So just the 9 lots of 3 Screamers.
And Herald on the disc.
Herald on the disc with the Grimoire.
Yep.
Then we had the Omniscient Oracles. So just Kairos, Lord of Change with Impossible Robe and Lesser Reward. So basically the Strength 8 weapon.
Yep.
And then just a cat, I had a D-Thirster. 11 pink horrors and 11 blue horrors.
Okay. So you essentially had those two scoring units and then obviously the spawnings that go with the blue and the pink horrors respectively.
Well, I didn't have any brimstone models.
Oh, of course, because the kit hadn't been released at that point.
And the 11 blue horrors I had was all I had. It's a lot of poker face.
Kill the blue horrors
first. They can split, can't they? Yes, they can.
Yes, they can.
That was it. And most of the event, they just got ignored just because they may have split or something like that.
Oh, wow.
So I found it was very good. Whereas lately playing with Brimstone, people aren't afraid to shoot them. People are afraid to shoot Pink Horror. So.
Because they generate more warp charge, essentially.
Yeah.
Okay, that's an interesting little tidbit there. And I think, though, Would it be fair to say that the fact there were no Brimstone Horrors available without either kit bashing your own or sculpting your own, because the kits hadn't, apart from getting them out of Silver Tower, you couldn't get the kits.
No.
So would that have played a part in the army list, do you reckon, for the Demon players that you did see?
Well, I actually play a Demon player in round two, and he had 40 Brimstone Horrors. They were flat pressed, so they're still flat in the back, but they obviously moulded their own. Close enough to what the actual models are.
Well, it wouldn't be hard to do a flat press and then just kind of put some texture on the back of them and call it a day, would it? It's not a terrible option.
Yeah. And next to some of the armies there, look quite good. I think we can talk about that a bit.
Well, yeah. Why don't we talk about that now before we get into your games? Because I do want to find out who you played and how your weekend progressed.
Mm-hmm.
So, from my point of view, the armies I played, looking specifically at those six, the standard was pretty good. Like, all of them had painted models. All of them were at least what I would consider a tabletop standard or above. And there were a couple of them that were really beautiful armies. But as I walked around the room, I certainly felt the polar ice caps of the painting standards to the point where there were unpainted models in armies. And that surprised me.
Because not even an undercoat, just pure grey.
Yeah, just grey plastic. And the players pack made it kind of, don't do that because we will. And they even said it on a video cast. Yeah. And I don't know whether that happened to anyone, but I certainly saw far more unpainted stuff than I was expecting. And then I think the average in the room was kind of a three-colour tabletop. Very
quickly done.
Yeah. And they looked fine, but there were some really beautiful ones as well.
Stood out well and truly above, yeah.
Did you see I forget what the formation's name now. It was the Brass Scorpion and the Soul Grinder formation, and I can't think of the name of that.
Hellforge Hunting Pack.
Yes, so it was that and a pair of, what are they called? I call them Hell Turkeys.
Helldrakes are part of that formation.
Are they really?
Yeah, it was just that formation, that was it.
So it was two Helldrakes, I think six Soul Grinders,
and the Scorpion.
The Greater Brass Scorpion. There was one that was converted, which I'll make sure there's photos.
The Brass Scorpion had Angrath coming out the back of it.
Yeah, and all of the Defiler's chassis were Bloodthirsters.
Yes.
And then they used the Mutalith from Warhammer Fantasy Battle kitbashed with the Helldrakes. And I've got a whole bunch of photos of this army because at the time I looked at it and went, I could buy a small car for this price of this army. And talking to the guy, it's all genuine. Like, it's none of this recast stuff. It was pretty impressive. But I'll put some photos up with the show notes for this episode because it's an army worth checking out. It was pretty impressive.
But there's also a lot of armies that you hear about but never saw. Like, I heard there was a Mastodon there.
Yeah,
I did not see it. So
I saw the results coming through for him because I saw the army list. And I think he went 4-2. Like, he seemed to have a relatively okay weekend. But I never saw the model.
No. But with 400 people there, you can't see everything. Well, that's just shy of it.
So. We had 391 with full results finish the event. And from what I gather, there was something in the low to mid 400s start the event. And that, I suppose, is something we can talk about quickly before we look at your games. I saw people leaving at the end of round two, in particular, on day one. And that struck me as foreign, essentially.
Yeah.
And I'd love to hear what you think about it, because here in Perth, I've never had a situation where a player at the end of round two has just gone, nah, I'm done, I'm not coming back.
Out of here. Yeah.
We've had guys leave through sickness, we've had guys leave through personal circumstance.
Very legitimate reasons.
Where they've come up and gone, here's the situation, and it might be halfway through a game. We had one unfortunate incident where a guy had just started setting up game one, had a phone call, and literally just walked out, left his entire army there, and called us later to explain the situation, and it was completely justified. But the idea of having, like, I saw a dozen people leave at the end of game two on day one. And I just went,
and they're not going to be local people. People have travelled to get there.
Well, it's not like, I'm sure there were some locals there.
Yeah.
But it's still Vegas. Like, it seems really strange. Like, were you expecting that sort of?
Not at all. You're at an event. You're there to play it all the way through.
Yeah. I don't know. It's certainly something. And I'd be really keen to hear from any of our American listeners, or anywhere else in the world for that matter. It's certainly not something I would expect here in Perth or really anywhere in Australia. So if you do have that attrition where if people can't win the event, they leave, like, what sort of percentage are we dealing with? Because by the numbers that I've kind of heard touted that started the event, you've had about something in the range of 20 to 30 players at least pack up and leave at some point over the weekend and not finish the event. And that's nearly, like, that's 8 to 10% of the event, which is not a small Like, that's not little.
And really, it's going to affect how people's flow through a tournament would be if people are suddenly aren't playing there and all that as well.
Well, that's it. If you win your first game and then lose your second and third and then don't rock up for day two, that changes the matchups for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And while I struggle with that concept because I wouldn't do it. Like, I lost my first game on day one and went, I don't care, I'm playing. I'm
going to go up from here.
But so I struggle with the mindset that would be, oh, I've lost two games, I can't win, therefore I'm not playing. I suppose it comes down how you set your own expectations and what you want to achieve out of the event, but...
Even world of professional sport, they still play the whole series through, even if they can't win, so...
I don't know, it's maybe it is just a different environment that we're used to, and maybe we are a bit sheltered from some of the...
Maybe it is Vegas, hey, I can go do that instead, it's something different, but...
It was certainly an eye-opener for me. It was something that I knew there'd be some sort of attrition, but it did seem like there was certainly more than I was expecting. And, you know, it didn't affect my weekend. I still had six great games, but it was certainly interesting to see that happening. So, day one, bright and early, signed in. Who's your first opponent?
I'm terrible with names. I know it was a...
Army then.
Yeah, it was Marines. It was the Skyhammer with a Liberius Conclave.
Okay.
Fortunately, he actually had stuff stolen apparently the night before out of the car, so his drop pods were Subway Cups.
Oh, Jesus.
I think it was drop pods easy to represent because a lot of it was old metal Marines and everything.
Oh, wow. So he did stuff stolen.
A lot of collecting stuff, out of the car.
Well, that's a shitty way to start your weekend.
Yeah, so he's running backs and forwards to check rules because not having the books and all that. But great guy, great game. End up winning that one. So I got a 10-1 win.
Okay. So it was a Skyhammer, Liberius Conclave, and then obviously like a demi company or something that went with it to round it out, or a CAD.
Bits and pieces, CAD sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's one of the few times I've Warp Storm actually turned a Librarian into a Herald and turned out to be Tigerius as well.
Oh, that's awesome.
Normally roll up when there's no cycles on the board. And you're going, oh, this is a good start, but also bad because now I'm right up in the top end of
things. You finished pretty strongly at the end of game one.
Yeah.
Did it, just out of interest with the Skyhammer, was it a Grav Skyhammer, do you recall? The Grav cannons or Melter cannons?
More Grav, but obviously my army
which
just
is even worse
at it,
for him,
because
there's no armor saves involved. Yeah. So it was a pretty poor matchup for him and a pretty good way to finish.
And it did pretty well against Marines, my own in a way, so yeah.
That's good. Okay, and it's always good to start the weekend with a win, because you kind of go, yep, you know.
My intention was to not get whitewashed, so right from the start, I'd pass that goal, so...
So we played round one, and the mission, it was kind of my first real competitive experience with the ITC mission format, because it's not something that we in Western Australia have ever done.
Well, I had one practice one with you.
Yeah, you and I had played a practice game, and I'd probably played three or four others with a couple of the other locals just to try and wrap my head around it, which proved vaguely beneficial, but I don't know about you, but I didn't kind of pay as much attention as I probably should have because it's not a format we use.
Well, I learned in that game I gave away a victory point to them because I let them kill something in my turn. So next turn, that was their objective. It's like, okay, this is scoring next round thing is a very big change to what we used to.
Well, we basically play a variation on the European team challenge missions where it's a combo of Eternal War, Maelstrom and Kill Point, so you're three. And then Slay the Warlord, First Blood and Linebreaker tend to feature as well. So we're used to the card mechanics from Maelstrom, where obviously the ITC is a completely different beast for the ambitions for LVO, and going forward it looks to be the same for the 2017 format. And yeah, that first mission in a competitive environment, learning and keeping track and remembering to roll them, and it was certainly an interesting experience for my first game, and it sounds like you had a very similar one where it was,
I think there's a lot more now,
Although one thing I did notice, and this is a broad statement across all of the missions, I found the Maelstroms really easy to score every round. I don't know about you, but...
Depending what you rolled, because I found the objective-based ones were easy for the person to contest.
Deny you, yeah.
In that one, and obviously having just lots of MSU, trying to get the kill didn't always happen. So,
but like the get into your opponent's deployment zone and deny your opponent being in your deployment zone, a lot of those were either very easy to get... I mean, I was running Corsairs with a lot of jet bike units, and you had a very similar style of army with all the Screamers. Those two in particular were very easy for you to deny or
that
claim.
Didn't feature very heavily in the scenarios. It was more two kill ones and two claim objective ones. Those other ones were just kind of minor. So
I found one round where I rolled those three turns in a row, but the guy I was playing it meant that I literally scored 2 points every round. So because you know, he wasn't mobile enough to stop me. Okay, so we finished with a win round one. We go into round two.
Yep.
Ignore Mike's commiseration and whinging about dice and all the rest of it in the game one, because game one I lost on the final turn on a dice roll, which was frustrating. Going into game two, who did you play? Well, what army did you play?
Demon, another demon army.
Oh, God, double Warp Storm. Okay.
Yeah. So he actually rolled on the Zench Warm Storm.
Which okay, so that's different. From Wrath of Magnus?
Wrath of Magnus one.
Yep.
Yeah, so he had the multiple brimstones, the omniscient oracles as well, and basically a big screamer star with the herald formation.
Oh, the herald's archaic.
Archaic, yeah.
Yeah. So it was
maybe a I can't remember that one. Cause,
so screamer star,
yeah.
Fate Weaver with another Lord of Change, and then Horus, basically.
Basically, that's it. Yeah. So maybe been a demon prince as well, but
so that game would have been interesting because you've got Warp Storm happening each turn,
yes,
overriding each turn, and it's player turn at that point. You're rolling.
Was it so much overriding because he was a Zench one? So it's when you roll on that chart again.
Oh, okay. So, oh God, that would have gotten complicated really
quickly.
Whenever
you're rolling Cursed Earth, you're buffing the other person as well and all that.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Whereas I found his Screamer Star helped him a lot more as opposed to my lots of individual ones. It was easy for him to pick it off. And that was the Relic as well.
Oh, God. So the Screamer Star picks it up with its two up rerollable. Yeah, it kind
of pulls, falls back sort of thing. So,
a tough mission for you to pull that one.
Yeah.
Win, loss, draw.
Lost that one.
How much?
Well, score-wise, I think I had a 0 or a 1.
Oh, okay.
I did find this scoring system was very polarising. Didn't represent if it was a close game. You either won, you lost, or a draw. That was it. So
yeah, look, and that was something I noticed as well, is that getting anything other than that really disparate like score, when you know 10-1 or 11-0 or 11-1, that sort of thing, happened quite a lot, at least for me.
Yeah.
I only had one game, which was the first game, that went 7-6. Everything else was just...
Yeah, as we're all the massive, same as well.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, we haven't really got enough data to say whether that's a personal experience based on the armies we talk or whether it's actually a representative of the event's format.
Or we're just used to overall scores then scale it, whereas that's just simple win-loss draw.
Yeah, and that certainly seems to be something that, certainly here in WA, we've never purely gone win-loss draws. We've done it on battle points and then the person with the most battle points wins, and I think there's pros and cons for both of those systems. I think, if anything, I think the ITC missions probably promote a more competitive format because all you're after is a win, and that can lead to some very cheeky wins being pulled out when you didn't think they could happen. I think the format we use tends to promote a more balanced approach to play.
Especially with Maelstrom, you keep out throughout the game. Yeah.
But I think, there's, like I said, there's pros and cons for both. So you and I have finished game two. We're both on a win and a loss because I won my game two. Going, oh God, please don't let me have flown halfway around the world to play an Aussie. That would kind of suck. So game three, what army?
Against a Gene Steeler Cult army.
Gene Steeler Cult?
Yes.
Now
this is a kill point one as well.
Oh God. And he's got a million
and hammer
of them.
Anvil set up, yeah. But the biggest one is they had the four flying Hive Tyrants.
Oh, okay. So that was, is it Skyblight?
Something like that, I don't know the formation name. But
there's a Leviathan detachment that lets you take a couple of a minimum troops. And then obviously the Skyblight one from memory allows one as well. But I could be wrong with that. I'm not a new player.
Yeah.
So you went into that one. That's an interesting match for you, actually, with all those flying Hive Tyrants.
It was one I was always going to have. Well, round three and four were always going to be hard ones for me because kill points and scouring.
Oh, and you've had all those screamers.
And all the screamers there.
Yeah.
And obviously all the Hive Tyrants at -7 for leader or -3 for leadership for psychers.
Oh yeah, they've all got their shadows and the warp power.
Yeah. So the moment I fail a impossible robe save, leadership takes on a 6. If you fail it, you're dead.
Oh wow, okay.
So mortar change kind of popped pretty quickly, sort of thing.
So with just very quickly on the impossible robe, is that a rolled item? Like, do you roll on that or do you get to pick that?
You get to pick that one.
Okay,
so it's just a flat out 3 or plus invulnerable, but anytime you fail it, take a leadership. If I fail it, remove from the table.
So could you have rolled a different relic for that?
No.
Oh, so it's a picked item.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not like one of the rewards or something.
No.
Ah, okay. So at that point, you're going, oh, God damn it. All right.
You've got this guy's supremacy, but I have to kind of go that way anyway.
Yeah.
Well, if we did get little ones, they'd just disappear and come back again, objectives and that. So
I'm assuming that Lord of Change didn't last too long.
No.
Between the volume of Devourer Fire combined
do,
with
yes.
the Neg 3. Yeah. Yep.
First, they killed a bit, basically because they landed. There's not much else left for them to kill, so he killed one of them, but they still wiped him out anyway. So yeah, I didn't have very much left at the end of that game.
So not a great match for you. Got a very close for
the Maelstrom ones, to an extent at least.
Yeah.
But yeah, not the best.
Well, that was the, like you said, that was the kill point mission, and you would have been giving them up, and you're not able to summon, and if you're splitting units, that's more kill points, and...
Yeah, at first it's all good. He's got lots of kill points too, but he also had the really strong stuff to counteract it.
So not the best of results for that particular round.
But no. So the end of day one, one win and two losses.
Look, I mean, there's always got to be winners and losers, I suppose. Yeah. So as long as you're having fun at that stage.
That's it, yeah.
Now we finished, I finished on a loss and then two wins. And Adam, who was with us playing Gene Stiller Cult as well, he'd gone... 11-0 game 1, 11-0 game 2, and then 11-0 game 3. But the game 3 was in the opposite way he wanted, and he dropped game 3 that day. So at that point, we've wrapped up at 7 o'clock or something like that.
Quite late.
It was reasonably late, and we went out for dinner and paid for our stuff at Forge World and went out reasonably late. It wasn't a huge night, but we were still out well past midnight or 1 a.m.
With the schedule I found, starting at 10 pushed it all so far back. An early rise in general, so it's like, what do I do before 10?
Yeah.
But then by the time you eat and all that, it's like, well, it's now 10 o'clock.
Yeah. So, and that's it. We were going out for dinner at 8:30, 9 o'clock at the earliest by the time you get back to your room, shower, change, because being in a room with all those people, although full cop to them, like I never felt like it was stuffy or heat. Like,
there was plenty of room.
Yeah. The four table lines were a bit awkward occasionally, but... I never felt hot and sweaty. Like, you go to some tournaments, and particularly with the Australian summer, it's hot and uncomfortable. And at the end of the day, you're going, oh my God, I really do stink. Never had that issue at LVI, I don't think.
No.
It was a really comfortable environment, and there was water readily available all around the room, and it was just a fairly relaxed place to be. So we all staggered downstairs day two. Now, at this point, Sam's joined us because... he's having to start playing Heresy. And I did get a quick chance to go and have a look at some of those armies. And like I said earlier, they're some really beautiful armies. And Sam's army's no slouch. Yeah. But it's certainly when you start comparing them to... I think it's fair to say, and I don't think you'll object to me saying that it was an eye-opener to see what some of the other people around the world were doing with Heresy. And some of them were just absolutely gorgeous.
It seems to be a universal thing. Heresy was it's a lot of effort.
Yeah. Although one comment he did make was, when we do Heresy events here in Perth, we always try and go Loyalist v Traitor for the matchups. We almost... Well, actually, let me rephrase that. I've never seen a Heresy event in Perth where it's been Loyal v Loyal or Traitor v Traitor. It's always been a matched play.
The narrative kind of...
Yeah. And one of the weirdest things for him is at the end of day one, he was saying to me he had to play a White Scar and a Blood Angel.
He's Ultramarines.
And he's Ultramarines. And he's going, I didn't expect to have to play Loyalists. And he didn't know the Legion rules, and they caught him out. And it was certainly an eye-opener for him, because I think he was expecting much closer to the format we had. Now, I don't know what the players' pack said. I don't know the actual missions they played or any of that sort of stuff. But that was an interesting thing to hear, because it was obviously part of his expectation, and whether that was made clear or not for him, I don't know. But
was it called the narrative 30k event he was in?
Yeah, he so wanted to go to...
Would imply a little bit of...
And take nothing away from the guys who organised it, because, you know, the everyone I spoke to, and even Sam, said he had a good time, but it was certainly an interesting...
curveball.
Yeah, that he wasn't expecting. So we've gone downstairs and left Sam to play his 30k with Gilliman and co., and we've gone across to our tables. Now, the tables that morning were actually easier to get hold of, because obviously they had the night to load all the data and make sure it was all sorted. So we got to our tables.
And actually, they released them about midnight.
Yes, we all knew who we were playing relatively early in the piece. And I've gone off to play my Eldar Scat Bike Wraith Knight Warp Spider army. And who did you end up against?
I first looked like I got Necrons. And then I've rocked the table. Yeah, it's Necrons with the Riptide Wing attached.
Now, this is interesting, because I only played Riptide Wing once, and that was round one in a Tau army.
Yeah.
And while we touch on this, I reckon it would have been one in... no less than one in five players had a Riptide Wing.
Yeah.
I reckon it was the single most used formation by a significant margin. I could look
either side and see, always see a Riptide Wing somewhere.
Yeah. I reckon in those groups of four tables... there was always at least one Riptide Wing in the eight players, without question. And what was really funny is I don't think anyone in Australia was actually running it. Like, not one of the Aussies was actually using it, but it was everywhere.
And not just in your town, it was just any army playing.
Any army that could was taking it, essentially. One in four was the number I heard touted, and I actually kind of believe that.
Believable, definitely.
But there were a lot of Riptides. So you had Necrons with a Riptide Wing. Yep. Obviously, the Riptide Wing is probably one of the most efficient 40k formations presently available.
The numbers alone spoke right there.
Yep, and it does a lot of things for a lot of armies that they can't get elsewhere, primarily things like interceptor, high strength, long range fire, indirect fire, thanks to the smart missiles, and then three monstrous creatures, which are,
if you do get there,
you know, in a Necron army in particular, they do a lot of things that Necrons don't. You've got AP2 guns, you've got a reasonable combat threat, you've got interceptor, you've potentially got skyfire if you need it. Like, it plugs in quite well at that point. So, Decurion or Akkad, do you recall?
Not exactly. I know there was, he had the two units of Wraiths, there was a unit of Bikes and the Lord, and some Scarabs with these Tomb Spiders.
Were the Wraiths reanimating is the question?
No, I don't think they were.
Okay, so it's probably Akkad then, because the Canoptic Harvest is how they get reanimate. Okay, so it's an interesting build at that point, and it makes sense when you think about it, because the costs on the Decurion are quite high to get it on the table, and when you're spending 600 points on a Riptide Wing.
Solid units to tie up stuff that you didn't want to shoot at the time with the Wraiths. I guess it worked in that regard.
How did you find the Riptide Wing?
Not as bad as I'd always made it, but again, having so many small units, it probably limited them to an extent. The problem was for me, again, being a scouring mission for that one.
Oh, this is right, the fast attack mission,
I'm giving away 9 right there through all of the screamers that we have.
Oh, wow, yeah, okay.
So again, very close game if you actually broke down the scores, because Oz managed to grab a lot of the objectives and all that, was he kept rolling the kill point one, so it worked out well for him in that regard.
Yeah.
But yeah, close, very enjoyable game, but again, ultimately another loss for me.
I want to hear a win in a minute. Huh? I want to hear a win.
Once it goes down, it goes back up again.
Look, I think that Riptide Wing, I don't think I can understate just how many, I dread to think how many Riptides were in that room. I mean, the first guy I played had 4 Riptides, and then I didn't see another one the rest of the weekend against me. And that included day 3, which we're not going to cover tonight because that was kind of the fill-in event. At least for me it was. But I know I saw double Storm Surge, double Riptide Wing a couple of times. It was like 5 or 6 Storm Surges. 5 or 6 Riptides, 2 Storm Surges, and the minimum requirements to get that on the table. And everywhere I looked,
and the list going down to rooms and all, it's just Riptides everywhere.
And it was funny because it wasn't too long prior to that event, I was talking to one of the guys here locally, Danger Rod Richard, saying to him in my Corsairs, I could put a Riptide Wing in this. I reckon that could work. Like, do you reckon they'd see that coming? Riptide? Yeah, maybe we could do a Riptide Wing. And when we walked through that door, I just went, okay.
They saw that one coming.
Wasn't an original thought there. It was clearly something that's done over here locally. So we had lunch. Nick down to Subway again for the second day or third day in a row.
Eat as quick as you can. Yeah. Yep.
And really good prices compared to Australia.
Yeah.
And back up to game 5.
Game 5, yes. This one was against Dark Elder.
Okay.
Possibly the only one at the event. There may have been a second one, but very few Dark Elder.
So pure Dark Elder?
Pure Dark Elder.
Okay. Lawrence from Tabletop Tactics was there. Now, officially on paper, his was a Dark Elder army because he spent more points on the Dark Elder than anything else. But Lawrence had a Wraith Knight, a bunch of scat packs, but officially his was a Dark Elder army. I didn't know anyone actually ran pure Dark Elder.
Yes.
Wow, okay. So Venom Spam?
Venom Spam had a Brax, or sorry, Grotesques.
Yep.
On that. And then had the Raider. Mostly the Spam and that.
So lots of poison, which is not good for demons.
No, all the toughness, the big Griblies kind of get hit there. But I learned Beam was very effective in that game. So just getting down 2 or 3.
Yep, Venoms don't like those sorts of things.
Even Screams, that's actually another win for me.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That army, whenever I've played my Dark Elder against demons, they hate it because the Venoms just go, we don't care what toughness you are, we don't care. They just
rate of fire, force the wounds.
Yeah, and you're putting out 12 shots of Venom. It can be really bad for a demon player or a Nid player in particular, where you just go, oh my god, like you can kill our big griblies and you've got a volume of fire that'll kill our little things.
But I found I was good in that regard because Screamers were good at one, destroying the vehicles.
Yeah.
But their slashing attacks with warp flame and all that was good for taking out the small squads coming out of them.
Yeah. And I think in terms of building an army to deal with a Venom Spam army, you've actually got a very good one there because, like you say, all of your Screamers are dangerous to everything in the Dark Dome. It's only armor 10, it's open topped, and you can kill them easily with Lamprey's Bites if you want to go down that road. Your monstrous creatures, as long as you mitigate most of the Venoms reasonably quickly, there's not much that threatens you at that point. They're shooting splinter rifles at you. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
So, off the back of the winner there, okay, we're now, what, two and three?
Yeah, that's it.
And we're going to try and climb the ladder for game six. Yeah. So, game six. Who'd you play?
Against Elder.
Oh, God. How many Scatterbikes?
Only two squads of Scatterbikes. Scathach Wraith Knight, which seemed to be about the only Wraith Knight you could take at LVO.
Yeah.
If you look around.
Inferno cannons or the Hellstorm cannons?
Inferno.
Okay.
And he had the Void Shield generator.
Yep.
And it was the Fire Dragons and some Striking Scorpions.
Okay.
Yeah, right from the start, he's kind of in for, all right, I'm not going to win it, let's just have a good game. And yeah, it was a good game.
That was a good attitude to have. Yeah. The Scathash Wraith Knight's a weird one. I saw a couple that were Sword and Shield. But other than that, it was either the Inferno Lancers or the Hellstorm Cannons.
Yeah.
And it was funny talking to a lot of people in the Hellstorm, I think they're called Death Shroud Cannons is the official word for them, was really big at the 2016 LVO. And then everyone's moved on to the Inferno Lancers this year. And that's partly due to the changes with D for the ITC, because those Inferno Lancers are just horrible guns, as you probably found out in this game, because 2d3 plus 4 shots per Wraith Knight is at strength 8 AP1 melter.
I thankfully got in combat very quick with a D-Thirster.
I just whacked it in the face with a D.
Yeah, it took out. I bought the D-Thirster just because I was expecting Knights.
And you didn't deal with Knights?
Not a single Knight until we got to day 3 or the next event.
Yep.
But yeah, so he didn't do a huge amount. He often got shot. But yeah, this game, he stood up smacked and actually did what he was meant to do. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. So he ended that game again on a win.
So you had 3-3.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So I was happy with that. So middle round, I can do that. Yeah.
Well, that last game, particularly with Scat Bikes and that Scathash, could have been quite poor for you, depending on a few different factors. That Scathash could have been a real pain, depending on how it had gone.
Well, I found a lot of it was scenarios and armies. To an extent was a big thing, not so much a generous for some of them.
Mm.
Like I said, the scaring ones were always going to hurt me.
Yeah.
That worked out well there.
Okay. So you finished 3-3. I finished 4-2 because I lost my last game to Lawrence from Tabletop Tactics with his Eldar, Dark Eldar, Scathash combo. And we all kind of... none of us made the top 8. Hayden Walduck from Queensland finished, I think, 23rd, something like that. And then I think I was the next closest at 51 because I went into that last round at 16th and then dropped to 51st after that loss, which sucked a little bit. And then we kind of trickled down the pile. I don't actually remember what the ranking you got was.
About 180, very much in the center of it all.
Well, if our listeners will excuse the clicking, I'm going to open my computer here and I'm going to have a look because I took photos. And I believe...
Some reason 186-ish rings a bell.
Let's see how good your memory is, because I should have a photo of it here for LVO. So the LVO picks...
I know of the... I was the second lowest of the Aussies.
You know, you might be having a saving grace moment here, because I don't think I've saved them here. I think I've saved them somewhere else. But I'll keep looking while we chat. So, unfortunately, none of us made the final... day 3, and if I'm honest, I was a little bit disappointed for Lawrence from Tabletop, because it would have been nice to have him trip it over and be part of that, but alas, it was not to be. I'm going to be really upset because I cannot find these photos absolutely anywhere. It's going to do my head in. I'm sure they're here somewhere.
You're fine on the moment I leave.
Probably. Oh, here we go. Games and results. This will tell me. Final placings. So the end of game 4. End of game 4, you were 331st.
I never looked at that one. Thanks for pointing that one out.
I have to do something. Yeah. I know that Emma took a, my wife took a bunch of photos, and I'll have to post them up in the show notes so we can, yeah, there's a lot of photos here I'll have to dig through, but I'll save that for post-recording. So we all went out again. We had dinner. We had a good night out, and moved on to day three. Now, we won't cover too much of day three. Suffice to say that I think the guys at LVO are still trying to work out what to do with day three. I know they've changed the format at the end of every LVO, from what I gather, and that I could be wrong, but that's my understanding, is they have changed it each year. And I think that's partly because of the knockout system that they have for day three, where you've only got the top eight, and you've got 400 and something players all of a sudden that have paid for a 3-day pass potentially that are looking to continue gaming.
And there's not a huge amount to do unless you're gaming to fill a whole day.
Yeah, so both of us played in the singles that day in two separate heats. It wasn't without hiccups, and I don't want to disparage the event too much, other than saying that they're obviously still trying to iron out kinks and work with
and what to do
an imperfect it. System and how to fill it in to make it the best possible event it can be for players. But going back to the championship side of things, I had six awesome games. I didn't have any situations where referees needed to be called, or there were arguments over terrain or rules interpretations or any of that sort of stuff that you read online.
Smooth run the whole way through.
So, and even day three, I didn't have any of those issues with rules, adjudications, all that sort of stuff. And I think that's an important point to make, is that the internet forums in particular lead you to believe that, oh, you know, it's all hardcore and, you know, you have all these rules arguments and you only get to turn four. Did you finish all six of your championship games naturally? Did any of them get called due to time?
I think one of them did, but even then it was turn four.
Okay.
But other than that, most of them finished. But some people were kind of expecting to finish early, and I said, no, we've still got time.
Yeah, let's play another turn.
All right, so it's last turn, do this. No, we still got to roll up and go again, so.
Yeah, and that was really interesting for me as well. I had the same sort of experience, particularly from the American players that I played. It seemed like, despite having two and three quarter hours, I forget which.
Yeah, they were decent length.
They were decent length anyway. For 1850. I was there going, no, we're going to get at least five turns. And I did. I didn't have one of them go to time, and all of them finished naturally. The one that did get close, we actually rolled for turn six and it failed.
Yeah.
And it was, I've seen a lot talking about, oh, you know, you only get four turns, and I don't understand that. Like, I didn't have a great deal of units and models, but I like...
Games get quicker.
As the game goes quicker, on, yeah.
It was people seem to build their armies relying on four turns, which some armies need those extra turns to really shine.
So. Yeah, and that was certainly an interesting thing, because yeah, it's very rare that in two or three and quarter hour games here in Perth that I have to go around and say, hey guys, now it's time to stop. It's just about every game finishes naturally, or at least gets to turn five before you say no, dice down. And yeah, there was certainly an expectation in the room of, no, four turns is fine. No, it's not. Because we've got 40 minutes. Like, we're going to play turn five now. So that was sort of interesting. What did you think of the terrain?
Especially for the quantity that was there, it was that you couldn't fault it.
No.
There's a lot of very similar table setups, but even the terrain itself was slightly different. Like, the buildings are often the big L in corners, but some had windows, some didn't. So you couldn't go, all right, the same table set as last turn, because you'd get, oh, wait a minute, I can't see you through there.
Yep.
So it did keep you on your toes in that regard as well.
I think I had two tables that felt lighter than the rest when I played them.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree with you that the line of sight blocking was pretty solid. There was certainly more terrain on the tables than I was expecting based on the videos I'd seen from the year before's LVO, and certainly the other American events I'd watched on YouTube. And I think the standard of terrain they produced in terms of the quality and the look and the feel and the paint jobs was... Given how many tables they did, absolutely awesome. It was incredible to see how much work had gone into it.
Obviously, it was 200-odd tables just for 40K.
Yeah, not talking about...
In the same room as us, there's still the 40K, Age of Sigma, the
and
friendlies.
The 40K friendlies.
Yeah.
And then they still had the 30K stuff in the other room, plus, I didn't get a chance to look at it, but they had War Machine, Malifaux, X-Wing...
Flames of War.
Yep, they had a bunch of terrain going on, and full kudos to them for producing the standard that they did. It was absolutely amazing. And... You know, I think the event, the championships ran smoothly. That once they got over a couple of the hurdles on day one with the Best Coast Pairings app, it all ran pretty straightforward. The time, I would have liked to have seen some way of managing the time in the room.
There was the occasional call-outs, but that was about it. You kind of got lost in the noise
to an extent. When you've got, I mean, we had 400, 500, 600 players potentially at one point in those rooms. Yeah, you didn't hear it all the time. I would have liked some sort of countdown clock on a wall that, you know,
had projector this, or something like that. Yeah.
In the end, I was using the OBSEC, Objective Secured app, on my iPhone and iPad to keep track of the time because it was the only way we could do it. I wasn't using it for the scoring side because there didn't seem a great deal of point. But it did mean that I could keep track on the time. So, yeah, I suppose that'd be something I'd give them as feedback for next time to kind of make it more visible. Because like you say, there are players, they're going, oh, you know, we can't fit a fifth turn in. No, according to me, we've got 40 minutes. Yep. Like, we can play turn five. Or, oh, we've only got, we can't roll for turn six. Well, we've got 20 minutes left. Let's see, because I reckon we can get another turn in. And I think the visibility of that would help with that perception for players. So before we wrap this sort of part of the episode up, the big question, would you go again?
I would. If I will is a different thing simply because of how far it is to go.
Yeah.
But it's definitely an event if it's said in the area or whatnot, definitely worth going for.
I think any of those travel events, now whether it's a 5-hour drive down to a country town in Western Australia, whether it's interstate, like I've done the Australian Team Championships a couple of times now, I've done High Lords of Terror, which is over in Sydney before, I've done a few of those interstate trips, and then I've done ETC, I've done LVO. I think any of those trips where you get to travel, whether it's, ideally it's with your mates, it's someone that you're comfortable with and hang out with and more than happy to
if
just...
not by then, it usually are anyway. Yeah,
well, that's certainly with ETC, that was certainly the case. And I think doing those trips, they're amazing fun. As long as you go in with the right...
It's not just the tournament.
It's the experience.
It's a road trip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
so it's only because of it is so... Well, it's what, 24 hours of transit for us to get there.
Yeah. Well, for me, it was Perth to Sydney, Sydney to LA, LA to Vegas.
Yeah.
And the whole, in terms of flight time, the whole thing was 20-something hours, 21 hours or 22 hours flight time.
I think it was, yeah.
We got laid over in Melbourne at one point there as well, but that's another issue. I think it was issue.
13 from Sydney to LA, and yeah, the 5 to get there and
stop
over times and all that.
So yeah, 24 hours.
Yeah.
And we had reasonable flights. And I think that's probably the biggest, apart from the money, of course.
Yeah.
That's the biggest hurdle for us is physically getting to the venue.
Even for you there to spend the 4 days, plus that it's a full week.
Yeah. Well, we left on Wednesday morning because I might have screwed up the flight a little bit. And then got there Thursday afternoon, played Friday, Saturday, Sunday, back on a plane Monday night, and with the time difference, we were back Wednesday afternoon. So it was a Wednesday to Wednesday. It was 8 days, essentially. Because by the time we got back Wednesday afternoon, it wasn't worth talking about. So, yeah, I'm in a similar boat. I would quite happily go and play it again. But if I do get to play it again, is another matter entirely. It's certainly a trip that I would quite happily repeat if I had the time, money, and...
Again, if I was over there as a holiday or something like that,
yep,
take your stuff, definitely. But yeah, as a dedicated weekend trip.
Yeah.
Week trip, I should say.
Yeah, it's a hard one to kind of go, yes, I'm going to do that every year. That you'd be a very, very...
If you're in the States, go for it.
Yeah.
Because it's quite easy.
Oh, look, and certainly anywhere if you live in America where you can do the return trip for a few hundred dollars compared to the thousands that we pay, it's one that I would recommend you go and play. If you're in America and you can get that time to go and play it, it's one hell of an event. And if you go for the right reasons, for the experience and for the atmosphere and...
The wow factor.
And for the fun. More than anything else, you won't be disappointed. If you're going over there to win it, well, you might come away going, oh,
there's only going to be one winner.
Exactly. And I think that's the key to it is if you're winning your games and you're having fun and you get to the final game, you've won six or you've won five and drawn one and hey, wow, you're the top eight, awesome. And there are guys who go over there to win it. But I think as someone who is only going to get to go to it once or maybe twice, who knows, I think you're going for the wrong reason.
Yeah.
I'd go for the experience, not for the winning.
You can say, hey, I was there.
Yeah. I mean, we are potentially... We attended the last 7th edition LVO, potentially.
Yes.
So, who knows? But look, at the end of the day, road trips are fun. Do them. Enjoy the games. And yeah, LVO is one that if I can go back to, I will try to. But we could talk about LVO a lot, and we've already been going for nearly 50 minutes now. And I think we might call it now, and we'll wrap up the episode. And I have no doubt we'll talk to Brad again in the future for more road trips. So we'll be back in just a second. Right, so we're going to wrap the episode up now. We've spent nearly an hour talking LVO, and we've had a lot of stories that sit in the back end of LVO outside of the games that are probably not suitable for recording and release to the general public.
What happens in Vegas?
Stays in Vegas, yeah, that's exactly right. Some things cannot be unseen, some drinks cannot be undrunk, much to the disgust of Sam and Adam on one particular night. I got to meet a whole bunch of new people, make a whole bunch of new friends that I'm still talking to now online. I got to meet some internet celebrities, Mini Wargaming, the guys obviously from Frontline Gaming, who put on an awesome event, and they should genuinely be proud of what they've achieved with that event. Lawrence from Tabletop Tactics, Manbeard Painting, the whole bunch of people.
Games Workshop.
Yeah, posts, James yeah. And the guys from Forge World were amazing. Yeah. We went out and had some drinks with them on Saturday night.
Yeah,
I think Saturday it was Saturday night.
Yeah, that blurred a little bit, but
that was another, you know, watching their face when obviously we were getting the leaks for Book 7 for Inferno, and
piecing it together.
Yeah, and James kind of going, "Yep, don't talk to me about that. I'm not interested. We're out here, like more drinks." It was an amazing, amazing weekend, and I am very glad I got to do it, and I hope to do it again. But, you know, I'm heading back to... It turns out I'm back in America in October of this year. We're going on a family trip after the Southern Hemisphere Open that we're hosting in September. Might be a
bit different then, but...
Yeah, but I have got permission to take an army with me. And at this point in time, the Frontline Gaming guys have been gracious enough because we're going down to San Diego. They're willing to let me come and play a game. So that'll be cool. So I'm going to take an army with me. It's the stipulation I have is one carry case, though, so... I've got to plan the army carefully. I've got 6 months to do it.
The last one was one carry case.
It was one carry case. The Corsairs did work, but now I've got an army to look at. So we'll see what happens. But thank you very much for being on the show, Brad. I wish we'd been able to line this up sort of closer to LVO. But when we came back from LVO, we ran straight into First Blood. We had 70 players at that.
Well, yeah, I flew in and First Blood was 2 days later.
Yeah. And then we jumped straight into Linebreaker 2 weeks after that. And obviously between work and commitments and everything else, this has kind of been the first opportunity to do this recording. So it is now nearly 2 months post-event. 7 weeks, I think it is.
About that.
So, you go,
this
wow.
This came very quick, wow. It did,
yeah. Very quickly, though, what's your next event? Obviously, we've got one event, WATC, coming up, which is our West Australian team event.
And for that one. And maybe this weekend.
Well, that's
depending how it goes.
Hopefully by the time of this, I'm going to try and get this recording out before this weekend, so that comment makes sense. We've got Sudden Encounters held by the Gaming Club Crags, the Quinana Rockingham Armchair Generals Society. And they do a good event. They've been big supporters of Objective Secured over the last 18 months. Gavin and the boys put on a great show. 1,500 points one day this weekend. A little bit no holds barred, which will be an interesting change from the slightly comped format we're used to. Demons again?
Yep, that'll have to be. What I'll take, I don't know. It's kind I'm free this weekend. I'm going now.
You got 24 hours to submit a list. It's fine.
As long as there's no painting, I'll make it.
I think the Think and Player Spec says preferred painted. But I know you. You always put painted model on the table.
So all my assembly last week won't make an appearance now.
But that'll be a good weekend, and it's good to see the club getting... I think we're in the 30s is the expected turnout for that one. So it's a good event for the club as well. And it's good to see the 40K community in Perth taking the little trip south. It's about 30 minutes south of where I am, and I'm 30 minutes south of the city. So it's a bit of a hike.
Close to an hour for me to get there.
Yeah, it should be about an hour or so for you. Maybe a touch more, depending on how the traffic
Sunday
looks.
Sunday morning should be nice and clear, at least.
Well, it's straight down the freeway. So anyway, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much again, Brad. And until next time, everyone, play more games. Enjoy 40K while it lasts for 7th. And we'll talk about 8th as soon as we get news.
Be a lot of podcasts there.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Take it easy. You've been listening to the Objective Secured podcast. If you'd like to get in touch, you can visit our website, objectivesecured.com.au. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/objectivesecured, or you can email us, obsec@optusnet.com.au. Thanks for listening.